spoken, Jesus was found alone. And they kept silent, and in those days told no one of the things they had seen. Well, the new year is 1 month old for all those who are presently sipping lattes at Starbucks or shopping for Super Bowl snacks in Hathmark. For those of us who have been called out this morning to hear a word from the Lord, for the church, the year that had its genesis just 2 months ago in Advent now stands on the precipice of Jesus' death and resurrection. The season of Epiphany, the season that celebrates God's light made manifest in the world, ends abruptly today on the mountain of Transfiguration. I think of W.H. Auden's words at the end of his Christmas oratorio. Already the mind begins to be vaguely aware of an unpleasant whiff of apprehension at the thought of Lent and Good Friday, which cannot, after all, now be very far off. Some years, there are 9 Sundays in the season of Epiphany. This year, there are only 4 before the Alleluias are silenced. On Wednesday, Christians, well, some Christians, not so much Presbyterians, will don ashes in anticipation of the season ahead, the season when darkness and death mark our lives and appear to win the day. The story before us is enigmatic, to say the least, and may not be any less so once I finish the sermon I am here to tell you. In order to hear a word from the Lord on the mountain where Jesus' face changed and his clothes became dazzling white, we need to begin where the gospel writers surely began. Begin with Moses on another mountain, toward the end of the exodus of God's people. It was after the people had tired waiting for Moses to come down the mountain. First time, after they had fashioned a golden calf to worship in the meantime, after Moses returned to see the people running wild and so smashed the tablets that bore the words of think the gospel writers opened the scroll of the book of Exodus before they began to write the story of Jesus' transfiguration, because they saw in the cloud and the words and the face of Jesus something of the back of God. Merciful, gracious, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, forgiving iniquity and sin. Well, in response to God's glory, Moses bows and worships. And then, forgetting himself almost immediately and his own private glimpse of God's glory, of God's words, Moses begins to intercede on behalf of the people, beseeching God to keep covenant with them, to accompany them through the wilderness still, to be the God says that he is. For 40 days and 40 nights, Moses neither eats bread nor drinks water. For 40 days he receives God's words, and for 40 nights he wrestles with the meaning of those words, the words that he will take down the mountain, the words given him that the people, might also see God's glory. I think the writers of the Gospels opened the scroll of the book of Exodus before they began to write Jesus' transfiguration, because they heard in the story of Moses wrestling with God's word an echo of the story they had written thus far, and their own wrestling with God's word. Jesus' godly glory, forgotten for the sake of saving our relationship with God. His accompanying of them through the wilderness of being merely human. The 40 days and 40 nights he fasted before he opened God's words to them in his hometown synagogue. The 40 days and nights ahead that would find him nailed to a cross. Well, finally, Moses comes down the mountain with the second set of tablets and with the skin of his face shining, because he had been talking with God. The light that God Lord's Day, the day of his rising. On the eighth day, to give them a glimpse of God's glory, Jesus takes them with him, Peter, John, and James. And Jesus goes up on the mountain to pray, to speak to God face to face, as one speaks with a friend. While he was praying, his face, like Moses' face, was changed, and the light of God's glory shone through him. Moses and Elijah join the conversation. They too are flaming out like shining from ship foil with the light of God's glory, God's grandeur. The glory that for Moses was God speaking. The glory that for Elijah was the sound of sheer silence. The glory that now gathers to a blinding light in Jesus Christ. Luke alone tells us that the three are talking about the culmination of Jesus' exodus, about Jesus' deliverance of God's people, all the people, including Gentiles, from death. Peter and James and John could hardly stay awake, as I see some of you are having trouble staying awake for this very closely read text of a sermon. But they kept their eyes open wide enough and long enough to see the glory, to see the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. But here is the most astounding thing of all to me in the story. While Peter is fumbling around trying to figure out what to say and do in response to the sight, a cloud came, like the cloud that came over Moses on the mountain. That cloud came and overshadowed them. And they were terrified, and they entered the cloud. That is to say, God's presence came and overshadowed the disciples. They were, the church is, included in the conversation. God was about to speak to them face to face as one speaks to a friend. From the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my son, my chosen, my elect. Listen to him." Listen. When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone. Three gospel writers tell this story of God's glory shining through Jesus, of God's cloud enveloping and including these three disciples, of God's voice speaking to them from out of the cloud. As it was with Moses, so it is with the church. God's glory is revealed to us in words and words. Jesus speaks, and the word Jesus is reveals God's glory to us. Yet it is as though, in the enigmatic details of this story, the hand of God covers us, lest we see God face to face and die. Likewise, we live most days and nights, 40 upon 40 upon 40, in the valley, with no inkling of God's glory shining out of the places where we wake and sleep and work and play and think and dream. A strange story like this one can make such an encounter seem all the more improbable, thinking it should be some flash of light, some miracle that we have never been privy to. Unless the 2 years you have to hear God with should, of a Sunday morning, actually listen to Jesus. When I think of the people down here in the valley who do listen to him, constraint